And right now there are certain events that remind us of our common humanity: floods, hurricanes, power blackouts, and this week a computer virus. The So Big Worm is being called the fastest spreading email virus ever, and it doesn't discriminate amongst its victims. Students at Pima Community College in Arizona couldn't register for classes. Morning commuters in Washington, D.C. who rely on the CSX train service were out of luck. Cyber cafes in Bangalore, India had to close down. What about you? Has the computer worm been playing havoc with your daily routine? Do you have questions about how viruses work and spread? Our phone number is 800-989-TALK. That's 800-989-8255. You can also send us email if your computer is working at totn@npr.org. Joining us now on the phone from her office in New York City is Michelle DeLeo, and she's a reporter for Wired.com. Welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Thank you.
So what exactly is this So Big virus?
It's a mess is what it is. It's a virus that the creator has been tinkering with for the last 6 months. Every time he releases it, he uses whatever he learned the last time around to make it a little bit more effective, a little bit more appealing. And it seems like this time he really hit the jackpot.
So any idea of why this person is doing it?
My personal feeling is that, remember when we were kids and we used to make prank phone calls?
Sure.
In the 70s? I think now kids have the capability to make prank phone calls to the entire world.
So this is the equivalent of, do you have Prince Albert in a can?
Yes, yeah, essentially.
Huh.
Now, that's my feeling anyway. I don't think this is like some great plot, you know, or terrorists or Uber hackers. I really think it's kids.
All right. Give us some definitions. Are all viruses worms, or is a worm a specific type of virus?
A worm is a specific type of virus. A worm can spread on its own. It doesn't need human interaction. A virus requires you to do something. You have to click on an email attachment. You have to download something. You have to take some action. Now, even though this worm is showing up in email and it does require you to click, it's also being spread on its own. It's self-propagating.
And what's distinct about this particular worm?
Well, apart from the fact that it's spreading so wildly, I mean, we're seeing, last I heard it was one in every 54 emails that's being sent has a copy of this worm attached to it. So those are pretty high statistics.
Now, a lot of us get that many emails about low interest rates every day.
And Viagra, right?
Yeah.
apart from the fact that it's very effective, obviously, the fact that this guy is tinkering with it, and he's looking at, do I release it on Tuesday at midday? Do I send it out on Thursday? What subject lines are appealing? You know, how can I really get into people's heads and get them to open this up? The other thing that it does is it installs a Trojan horse on your computer.
A Trojan horse?
Yeah. That's a word for a program that looks like it's something else but actually contains something evil, like the old myth, right?
Uh-huh.
It looked like a nice gift. It had something that they didn't want in there. When a Trojan horse gets on your computer, often it provides remote control capabilities for somebody else. So what's happening is that infected computers are being remotely controlled by the hacker or hackers and being used to spew out more copies of this virus. So that's why it got such a head start.
Our telephone number again is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, our email address, totn@npr.org. And let's go to Ernie, who's on the line with us from Hubbard, Oregon.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, Neil. Thanks for taking my call. My question is, we use Windows Outlook
mm-hmm.
for our email,
uh-huh.
and we use a preview pane to see what's coming into our mail. Is that enough to put this virus into effect in our system?
I haven't seen this one working through the preview pane, but a lot of them do. So I would say that it's probably better to turn that option off.
That sounds like bad news, Ernie. I guess Ernie's gone.
Maybe the worm got Ernie.
Maybe the phone got, at least got his got his phone. Let's not get too alarmist here. Let's go now to Annabelle, who's with us from Butternut, Michigan.
Hi there.
Hi.
Are there particular messages or some sort of common link with the messages that you should not open, or is it just something that you'll be susceptible to whether or not you have email access on your computer? Or?
I would say in general that you shouldn't open any attachment that you're not expecting.
Just an attachment to an email?
Right. Even if it's coming from your mom, your grandmother, anybody, because a lot of these viruses now spoof the address. So it looks like it's coming from somebody that you know. And you may say, oh, mom sent me, you know, a photo or whatever, but it actually isn't. The best rule is just don't open an attachment unless somebody says, hey, I'm going to send you something. Okay. If in doubt, send an email to the person and say, did you just send me something? Okay. So that, I mean, if you follow that rule, 99% of the time you will not get a virus.
Okay.
Apart from that, in this specific virus, the subject lines that we're seeing coming in are thank you, my details, my resume, and there's a couple other ones floating around as well. But chances are you'll see a whole bunch of them, like, lined up in your inbox, so.
Okay. One more question?
Sure.
Is there a particular goal that this virus has in mind, besides just kind of wreaking havoc?
I think the goal for most of these guys is to see how quickly they can spread to get a little so-called fame, you know. but we're also concerned that it might be used to spy on personal information in people's computers because of that remote control capability.
Okay.
Tell us, thanks, Annabelle, for the call. Yeah. The remote control capability, what would this allow the hacker or hackers, as you mentioned, to do?
Well, first off, let's say malicious hackers, because there's a lot of really good hackers out there who are trying to stop this. I should have stressed that in the beginning. Excuse me. What it allows you to do is anything that the user who's sitting in front of the computer can do. You can download files, you can change things, you can make the machine take any action that you, the person sitting at the keyboard, could do.
Could it order a car from on the Internet?
Well, if they can read your password, you know, and if they have the ability to, if you store your credit cards somewhere on your computer and it's not encrypted, yeah, sure.
All right. That's scary. Let's go now to Jesse, and Jesse's on the line from Cleveland.
Yeah, hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
My computer, just about a week ago, I find when the telephone line is plugged into it, as soon as I turn my computer on, about 5 minutes later, a thing pops up and it says, remote procedure system shutdown.
Well, that's the blast worm, Jesse.
It just starts counting down, and then it shuts down.
Yeah, that's the blaster worm. That was last week's worm.
Oh, we have. Sorry to be so out of date, Jesse.
Yeah, we've got three worms going around. If you could go to wired.com and find my email address, I can tell you how to get rid of it. It's a little bit more complicated. Or I can do it on the radio if you prefer.
Why don't you go to the wired.com website? That would
okay, I can do that.
Okay.
Great. Look for Michelle DeLeo, Jesse. Send me an email.
That's DeLIO.
That's right.
Okay.
Jesse, thanks very much for the call.
All right. Thank you for taking it.
All right. Bye. There is, a helper virus. You've talked about the white-hatted hackers who are out to combat the so-big virus.
Yeah, but, you know, the helper virus is causing more damage than the blaster one that's bothering Jesse's computer.
And how is that happening?
Well, what it's doing is it's looking for computers that are infected with the blaster worm, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And by constantly looking, it's as if somebody's at your door, like, banging, you're not going to get much work done. And that's what's happening on the Internet. This worm is just crawling around, banging on doors, trying to see, you know, can I help you? And it's just causing so much traffic and excess garbage that it's slowing things down.
The Jehovah's Witnesses of worms.
Yes, that's a perfect description. And what the worm does is, if it can get into your computer, it removes the blaster worm, and it also applies the Microsoft patch that prevents the blaster worm from getting in the first place. So it seems like a nice thing to do, but it really isn't.
We're speaking with Michelle DeLeo of Wired.com about the, a couple of worms that we're finding out about, So Big and Blaster. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get another question. And this is John, who's with us from Charlotte, North Carolina.
Yeah, my question is, I mean, she stated that this potentially was released by kids, which is a possibility. It was released by some type of hacker group that's run by teenagers, but I think it's more in the 18 to 20 area, because this is a kind of sophisticated worm that was released, and they are kids that can write these worms. But this worm, even though it's harassing and potentially causing millions and billions of dollars in damage, she doesn't state that this worm could do a lot more damage. The issue is all these worms that are being released regularly have the capabilities to modify the code very simply and to delete files on your computers or even erase the entire computer itself. And hackers are not doing that. These worms are really wake-up calls to the industry to tell them there's problems that need to be fixed.
Michelle?
Oh, I absolutely agree. I don't know if the people... I know some virus writers are writing viruses to send the message, you know, to tell people that they're not doing the right things security-wise, to point out the company's failings security-wise. So, yes, absolutely.
And one other question real quick. The problem with all these worms that are going right now, they're a shotgun. They're being blasted out to everybody in general.
Mm-hmm.
It's a harassing thing. People do not understand that a worm or a virus can be either an IP address or an individual. In testing in labs, we have written viruses that can actually target an individual logged onto a single computer.
Sure.
John, that's interesting stuff and also pretty scary. Thank you very much for the call.
Thank you. Bye.
Michelle, I understand the So Big Worm has an expiration date.
Yes, every variation, it started hitting the net in January, and you might have seen it in your inbox. It came from big@boss.com. That was the first incarnation of this worm. It is coded to stop working about a month after every release. And we think that's so that the virus creator can then tinker it and release the next more efficient version. This one will stop working on September 10, and we expect to see the next variation shortly thereafter.
A lot of people would say the first question, September 10th, is there any significance in that date?
You know, I thought so too, but since you started releasing them in January, it's always been about a month. So I think unless you really planned ahead, that it just happened to be the day before September 11th.
Another phone call. Carl is on the line with us from Tallahassee.
Yes, hello. I did want to just get a clear understanding. I believe I understood you to say that 90%+ of this problem can be avoided by never opening attachments until you've verified the sender. And then I've had an interesting experience with a free program that allows me to create my own blacklist and delete my messages by domain name off of the server, and then create a friends list so that by using it, I only receive the emails that I want to, and the rest all get a message bounced back to them saying that I don't exist as an email address.
I think that's a great idea for spam. But if you've got a virus that's putting bogus sender information on itself, it can appear to be coming from one of your friends.
But then it becomes a matter of never opening attachments until you verify that
exactly.
They were purposefully sent.
Exactly.
And that should cover almost every instance, right?
I would say if you do that and you run a firewall, you're in pretty good shape.
Okay.
Okay.
Carl, thanks very much.
Oh, thank you.
See if we get one last call in. And this is Michael, who's with us from Nashville.
Hey, how you doing?
Okay.
Hey, I'm working with the Postal Service. I'm a postman. And I just wanted to point out, as everybody's paying their bills online and being affected by these worms, that rarely has the United States Postal Service ever passed the virus to anybody. with the exception of the anthrax thing now.
Yeah, but that's been a while now.
Yeah.
That's a great point.
Michael, thanks very much, and we'll all start licking our stamps.
All right. Y'all have a good day.
You too, Michael. And Michelle DeLeo, thanks very much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Michelle DeLeo is a reporter for Wired.com, and she joined us from her office in New York City. In Washington, don't forget, Ira Flatow's here tomorrow with Science Friday. In Washington, I'm Neil Conan, NPR News.